Well, our current guest, David Goldman, a.k.a. Spengler, would disagree with that sentiment. He would argue that it is not the end of the world. In the title of the other of his books that's currently out, he would argue that it is just the end of you. Welcome back, David Goldman, a.k.a. Spengler. You want to give us a brief insight into that other book that you have out?
Well, the idea of it's not the end of the world, it's just the end of you, is that we have a culture which leads us to destroy ourselves in various ways, whether it's economically. If we fail to have children, we won't have a tax base. We won't have people to buy houses. The demographic shift is a major factor in the economic crisis. It affects our married life. It affects us sexually. The proliferation of sex as a recreational sport as opposed to a nuptial mystery, as in a religious standpoint, has led to more misery, I think, than anything else inflicted on the human race. It affects us and our perceptions of art. So it's really a survey of what's wrong with the culture and how to survive in a world where a great deal of the culture seems to conspire to make us crazy.
All right. And that's as you mentioned before, when we were talking off the air, it sounds like the two books complement each other very well, although it sounds like the How Civilizations Die is more of the intellectual synthesis of things, and that's always much more interesting.
How Civilizations Die is about why we have a catastrophe ahead of us, a catastrophe, like the man said in the movie, of biblical proportions in the Muslim world, what the historical precedents for that catastrophe are, and what we ought to do about it, which is basically isolate ourselves from it, avoid the flying debris, and not waste American lives or treasure trying to fix it.
Now, when you talk about one of the theses of your book is that Islam is undergoing, at least part of it, is undergoing a demographic implosion that matches anything that we are concerned about in the West. How does that compare with what would appear to be a somewhat more pessimistic point of view on the part of, say, a Mark Stein in his book America Alone?
Well, if you take a freeze frame at this particular instant, Muslim birth rates are much higher than the United States. But if you look at the trend, the Muslims are a generation behind us in many countries in going through demographic winter. In some cases, they've more than caught up with us. America is at replacement with about 2 children per family. Turkey, except for the Kurds, and Iran are at 1.5 and falling, so we're really much better off than they are. That is not necessarily something to be complacent about. What it means is that we have countries with tens of millions of people which are heading into an insoluble kind of crisis and will respond to that crisis by acting in the most desperate and sometimes suicidal fashion. Now, people say, Iran, if they've got nuclear weapons, well, Israel has nuclear weapons. We've got nuclear weapons. Deterrence works. Why won't they simply be deterred from using them? That, in my view, ignores the fact that the Iranians know perfectly well they're not going to be there in 3 generations, and their last chance to grab their neighbor's oil and establish their Shiite empire is in the next 10 to 15 years. And they're willing to play all or nothing. They're willing to stake their physical existence on success, because if they fail, they're dead anyway. Think of a bank robber with a brain tumor.
There's there's another country as well that you argue is headed toward a demographic disaster of a slightly different sort. You talk about Egypt and the notion that the educated class there is not having kids. The uneducated backwater Egyptians are having kids, and that's reflecting itself in not only social instability, but also, of course, we're starting to see the financial consequences of that as well, with capital flight and the inability of them to raise money to fund even enough to feed their own people.
Well, Joshua, to paraphrase Oscar Wilde, the Muslim world goes directly from infancy to senility without passing through adulthood. You have countries like Egypt and Pakistan where nearly half the people are illiterate. They live on the farm. I mean, Egypt has 60% of its people on or around the farm. They still import half their caloric consumption. The difference between Egypt and the Latin American Banana Republic is the bananas. The point at which Egypt began to blow up politically was when world food prices started to rise, mainly because of the bottomless Asian demand for feed grains. The newly rich Asians don't care how much they pay for grains, so the price keeps going up. That prices the Arab poor out of the market. Chinese pigs are ahead of line to eat before Arab peasants. That had a lot to do with the blow-up's misnomer, the Arab Spring, called Better Springtime for Arabia, like in the Mel Brooks movie. And I think the result is going to be a catastrophic tailspin, which will lead to Somali-like conditions of chaos and ungovernability and real famine with millions of deaths. And if I sound pessimistic about Egypt, let me at least say that when catastrophes happen, the best thing that can happen is that they shouldn't happen to us, but to somebody far away from us.
Yeah, and that's where you seem to take some difference with Robert Kagan's new book. You've reviewed that for Tablet Mag in a fine review. Robert Kagan's new book, The World America Made. Why don't you give us your quick take on that? We have about 2 minutes.
Kagan is a smart and well-meaning fellow, but he makes the terrible mistake of believing that American democracy is something you can freeze dry and export and pour water on and reconstitute somewhere overseas. He thinks it's a technology that can be learned. So his idea about nation building has gotten into all kinds of trouble. My view is there are countries that simply will not make it because their view of who human beings are is radically different from ours, and we can't simply teach them to go through the motions of democracy. We simply have to isolate ourselves from their crisis and prevent them from hurting us.
And I guess to that extent also, you would, and we have about a minute to go here, which can't do justice to the idea, but you would argue that the current analogy, or the current situation, is much more analogous to a 30 years war viewed from afar than a Peloponnesian war that we're involved in.
Oh, absolutely. The 30 years war in Europe in the 17th century between Catholics and Protestants killed 40% of the population of Central Europe, and I think something like that will happen between Sunnis and Shiites. And our trick is not to take sides, not to try to fix it, but to prevent the spillover from leading to things like nuclear explosions in American cities.
And to that extent, other than simply staying out of the way, to what extent are we able to do that? And what would be the quick thumbnail foreign policy prescription that Spengler would give us?
We support our friends and we frighten or disable our enemies. So if Saudi Arabia is allied to us and Iran's attacking them, we deal with the Saudis. If the Saudis are funding terrorism, we make it extremely uncomfortable for the Saudis. Remember that the place is run by 3,000 people. We know where all of them live, so it's not difficult to discourage them. We have to fight each battle separately from the standpoint of protecting American lives and protecting American interests, not fixing everybody's problems.
Great. Thank you very much, David Goldman.
Thank you, Joshua.
David Goldman, a.k.a. Spengler, a fascinating interview. Read his stuff. You'll find it linked over at jsharf.com. We'll be right back after the break.